Good day, and welcome to the Certification of Services Q&A for Service Providers conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Adele Barr. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you very much, and thank you everyone for joining us today for this special session of the Q&A for the Certification of Services. I'm on the line really quick just to talk about the ReadyTalk, and it seems there's quite a few of us already in the chat, so we'll go on. You see you have ReadyTalk at the beginning. You can go into full screen mode by pressing that full screen button. Or again, of course, you make sure you don't push that button over to the right because that's the exit conference. But it seems like some of you already posed with that, so I'll go on to the next slide. And we do have that raise hand button that we've indicated on previous calls that we won't use for these particular calls. But of course, to ask a question, you will press star one on your phone during the Q&A segments of the call. And of course, you can ask questions directly in the chat at any time during the call. If you accidentally press the button, you can always press it again to lower it, or someone at PPM will go ahead and lower that for you. And of course, most importantly, navigating to the chat screen. As you can see, it opens up into full presentation mode, but if you look to the lower left and chat with everyone, then that will open up to the chat and participant list side panel. And then, of course, up at the top, clicking on the group chat, that will take you to the chat, and you should be able to type in your messages. And of course, if you just want to see the full screen, you can also press on the arrow top, and then it'll go into full presentation mode for you. And here, just a reminder, letting you know where you can find information on the previous call that we had. Policy changes were presented on October 30th, 2018. And if you go to your Ticket to Work event archive, you'll find the presentation, an audio recording of that call, and a text transcript. And without any further ado, I will hand this over to Kimberly Cutler.
Thank you, Adele. Hello, everyone. Thank you again for joining today's call. The purpose of this call is to allow a platform for providers to ask questions regarding certification of services and proof of relationship requirements. We do understand that we've had a couple of calls since the new policy went into effect on August 1st. And we do recognize that it was a lot of information that we were providing. So today we wanted to allow a platform just to take the questions that you have and try to provide answers so that you guys can have clarification of the process. Before we open the line for questions, I just wanted to share some information with you all on the call today. Just wanted to note there are two possible reasons why an EN would fail to show proof of relationship. First is if the EN does not submit a cost or certification of services when requesting a Phase 1 Milestone 1 payment when you're using evidence of earnings of the work number, earnings already proven in the SSA system, or an employer-prepared earnings statement. So whenever you're submitting for a Phase 1 Milestone 1 and those three items, that's your proof of earnings, you must also show proof of relationship. So if you do not submit that proof of relationship, you will fail a cost. In other words, you would fail to show proof of relationship. The second reason why an EN would fail a cost is if the EN submits a cost, but it fails a review. And the most common denial reason or the most common reason that we see that the costs are failing assessments is when is the milestone range, or let me back up, the certification of services range or the cost range does not cover the milestone range. And so you just want to be sure that your cost range covers the entire range. So if you're asking for a Phase 1 Milestone 1, and this is just a quick example, and your claim month is, if you're asking for a Phase 1 Milestone 1 and your claim month is March 2017, then of course you need to show services that you provided during that month. What we're seeing at TPM when we're processing the certification of services is the ENs that are asking for a Phase 1 Milestone 2, 3, or 4, and they're not, so they're the services that they're sending in to us does not cover the entire range. And one thing that would help you is just making sure that whatever your claim month is for the particular payment, just make sure that you're providing a list of detailed services with dates. And one way to make sure that it's covering your entire milestone range is just list the services that you provided from the month of ticket assignment through your claim month. So if the ticket was assigned in January of 2017 and you're asking for a Phase 1 Milestone 2 at May 2017, then just make sure when you send in your certification of services that you have services listed out with dates from January 2017 through May 2017. So that's one of the biggest reasons. Some ENs are, they're only giving us a couple of months of services, and that's a case where your costs may fail review. Another reason that the certification of services, that it may fail a cost review, is the quality of services being provided. So just a couple of things to remember that we've noted before. Quarterly contact does not show proof of relationship. You must show monthly contact with beneficiary during those initial services, so during the Phase 1 milestone period. Other things that we're seeing that ENs are listing as services is, an example, email ticket holder reminder to submit pay stubs. Again, that is not a service. Or called and left a message for ticket holder to call back to discuss resume. That's an outreach, but it does not show what we would consider a quality of services for your Phase 1 milestones. So you just want to make sure that, again, your certification of service range includes or covers your milestone range. And you also want to make sure when you're submitting for a payment request and you do not have pay stubs that you always submit proof of relationship when you're submitting those cases. And if you submit proof of relationship with your original request, it helps speed up the process of your payment. If you do not submit the request, then we have to perform an outreach, and then we have to wait for that information to come in. So just please be aware that you would need to provide proof of relationship when requesting Phase 1 milestones, and you do not have pay stubs available as your proof of earnings. So I don't want to take up too much time because, again, this is a platform to allow providers to give us their questions and we can provide you with some answers. So at this point, Anna, what we would do is like to open the phone lines for any questions that we may have.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. We will take our first question from Mary Lynn Revoir from American Dream Employment Network. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mary Lynn. What did you say? Oh, hello, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, great. I'm sorry. All right. I have two questions related to what Kimberly just shared. Actually, two different scenarios. So, If the previous payment that the EN has received is prior to August 1st when the change was made for proof of relationship, you've already been paid back for your previous payment, maybe in January, March, or whatever, a date before August. Are you guys requiring the EN to still provide documentation of services for those previous months? I think there's a couple of things that's causing the confusion of maybe why some of us are not always submitting the correct range of what you're asking for, because if the payment's already been made, in our opinion, it seems like, okay, you paid it, you've acknowledged, we've done the services, so we weren't realizing that we had to go back and show documentation for all those months. So that's the first scenario. Can you comment on that?
Yes. Hi, Marilyn. This is Kimberly. And the answer to your first question is yes. So, and I understand what you were saying, and I'm going to go back to that example. If you received a phase one milestone one and two prior to the August 1st change to the or the proof of relationship, if that phase one milestone one and two, if we pay that based on earnings already proven, employer prepared earnings statement, or the work number, then yes, we are going to ask you to now provide proof of relationship for those months to satisfy your next payment. And because those months make up the payment or make up the milestone period for the request that you're asking for now after August 1st. So to answer your question, yes.
Okay. And then I'll just one more quickie and I'll let some else hit the turn. In this, a similar scenario, but the difference being, let's say in September, we submitted a cost for phase, this is say phase two. And then we want to do a phase three. Do you expect the documentation to go previous months that were already sent to you in the previous cause? You already have it from the first request, that like since August.
Okay, right. So in that case, and I think we covered it, so yeah, I just want to make sure that I understand the scenario. So you submitted for a phase one milestone two in September, and you provided a cost that detailed the services for those months, okay? So now you're asking for a phase one milestone two. Then you can use the same cost. You are going to have to resubmit it with now the date that will cover the milestone of your next payment.
No, okay, that's not quite my question. I understand I'd have to resubmit, but you're still going to require the EN to provide you with the proof of the services that were provided for the earlier eligible months. We already have that on file. I don't quite understand why the EN has to recreate that in addition to the months that are covered by the current claim that you're making. So I just want to make sure you really want us to go back and give you the same information again.
No. Mary Lynn, this is Deborah Tennessee. Let's put some dates there so we can make sure that we're all understanding what you're asking. Okay, we had a phase one milestone that we paid in July, and you had a proof of relationship in July. Then you requested a phase one milestone two in September, and we had a proof of relationship that covered, what was the first one?
July through September.
You had one that covered August.
And
August,
September,
or either you had pay stubs, let's say either one for August and September. Now you're ready to submit your phase one milestone three for December. Because of the fact that you have submitted a proof of relationship between July and September, I believe it was, those are the dates.
Right.
You don't have to go back and resubmit anything for that. You've already given us that. We already have it in our files. What we would need from you is any month after September that would make up that phase one milestone three. And the reason I'm saying any months is because it may not be consecutive months. You know, you may have.
And I totally agree with you, Deborah, but we have gotten some requests to we've sent in a COS for a payment that was the phase two, let's just say two or three or four, anything after one that we've already submitted to you. And we've been asked to, it's gotten the email that says you have not, it was insufficient. So I guess I just wanted clarification for all of us on the line. If you already have a cost with proof of dates and it's already been paid, we only pick up from where we left off for the months that are being within that range of the payment we're requesting.
And that is correct because you've already given us that data. You don't have to give it to
us
twice.
I totally agree with you. However, I do think maybe that just needs to be looked at a little bit closer because I know I have a number of emails that have asked me to redo that. So I just wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Mary Lynn, this is Kara. Give us 1 minute. Mary Lynn, this is Kara. Give us 1 minute.
It's only when you have something.
So, Mary Lynn, this is Kara. So what Deborah said is correct. We apologize for any confusion there's been in the past, and we'll make sure all staff, both SSA and Maximus, are trained properly. And, yeah, if you've submitted evidence for your costs in the past, you don't need to resubmit. We have that in our files. Next question.
We will take our next question from Susan Webb, Ability 360. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. The allowable pay stubs and proof of earnings, the work number doesn't always have people on it, or they're also getting very pricey to even request whether they do. There are other services out there. If we can get the earnings data from another service, is that acceptable? It's not just the work number we can use, is it?
Ms. Kara, the work number doesn't qualify as proof of relationship. That would only be a pay stub that we would accept as proof of relationship. What the work number does for you is it shows you that the it's evidence that the person was paid whatever, SGA or trial work, and we would still require a cost along with the work number. So if there's another service you want to use, those aren't vetted by Social Security, and we can certainly take it and compare it to what we have in our system, but I don't know that that would help you, and I'm not sure I would advise you to spend the money to do that. It could be something we already have in our system. Does that make sense?
Well, then, I thought that the work number was just as valid as the pay stub, so I'm misinformed on that, too. So what is the value of the work number? I mean, if we're not going to get paid using that, you want a cause anyway, then what good is the work number?
Well, you have to understand why the work number, and maybe there's other people who have the same confusion, why the work number is not acceptable, because you get the work number from an outside source that doesn't prove that you have a relationship with the beneficiary. And that's our goal, is that if you're getting the pay stub, you're getting that directly from the beneficiary. So one would presume that, you know, you're in contact with them. The work number doesn't prove that at all. The work number was good several years ago when we were doing certification payments, basically.
Well, you know, let's get real, because I know I'm not the only one in this situation, and that is that you deliver a lot of services to people up front, and they're all very grateful, and then after they get the job, they somehow get amnesia about what they agreed to do as far as their earnings reporting. And even though we do send out the letter and ask them for their pay stubs and we do try to contact them, and it doesn't happen all that often, but nonetheless, we're investing a lot in these people, and for whatever reason, they just decide that they don't want to be bothered with us anymore. And what do we do in that situation? I mean, you invest hours and hours of services into people, and they just don't cooperate. And it's not fair that we should not be able to get paid if we have, like, the earnings data, or you have it in SSA's files. Maybe they reported it to the SSA directly, and we can't get paid for that when we delivered all those services. I don't understand the logic behind that.
Well, Susan, this is during the phase one part that we're talking about. You can use the work number for phase twos and outcomes, but for the phase ones where you're supposed to be in the part where you're providing services and having a relationship with the beneficiary, from our perspective, if you're not in touch with the beneficiary during this, you're not providing those services for them.
But we've already provided a lot of services up front to even get the job to begin with.
But then
all the benefits management.
But your costs would show. I'm sorry. Your costs would show that then.
Oh, that's going to work?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if we do all that though in the first, you know, 3 or 4 months, then as we go through the rest of the phase one, we're trying to make contact with them, but you just said that, you know, just a note saying that we asked for a pay stub, we tried to make contact, we left them a message, whatever, that that's not acceptable to show a relationship. So the relationship was early on, and then after they get the job, they decide that they're doing great and they don't want to be bothered with us anymore, even
no,
though they have an IWP. Go ahead.
No, Susan, I totally understand that, and you and I have had this same conversation for years, so I get it. You show in your costs the services that you provide. You provide intensive services, whatever they happen to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. Now you're in milestone three, so now you're mm-hmm. in months, you know, 7 through 9, you know, and
mm-hmm.
they don't want anything to do with you. You
mm-hmm.
just document that. You know, if
okay.
they you document that you're supposed to reach out to them monthly at this point, call
yeah.
them on September 21st, no answer. Call them October 15th, you know, they said they didn't need any help. Whatever it happens to be. All the services may be done up front, and now the person's working and they don't want to bother with you. I think that does happen. If I've been
okay.
working for 9 months in a job, I may not require any more services. We get that. You just have to show that you've provided the services and you're trying to maintain a relationship with the ticket holder.
Okay. Well, you know, Carrie, we have talked about that, but you're now making changes, and I sure heard you say the opposite, or somebody said the opposite.
Not
me. Than you. Yeah. So
thanks
for clarifying that that part has not changed. If we can demonstrate that we delivered the services, we're going to be okay.
Yep, and we
okay.
do need something.
Yeah.
This is Deborah, Susan.
Yeah.
We do need
yeah.
something, a statement or something, and,
sure.
and it would be best if the beneficiary signed that they do not want additional services.
Mm-hmm.
We do need to see that. And it's
okay.
the same thing that it's very similar to our OEN cost process when we had a cost was a requirement for payments at different stages. It was
mm-hmm.
acceptable if the EN did contact the beneficiary, but the beneficiary stated that they were okay and they did not require any further state services, and the beneficiary signed off on that. We can accept that.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure that part has actually not changed. Okay. I'm happy now. Thank you.
And the part, Susan, just let me clarify one other piece that you came up with, and that had to do with the work number.
Uh-huh.
The work number, as far as what this call is all about and accepting those earnings, now for phase one milestones, there are two requirements. One is the earnings requirement, and this work number may satisfy that requirement, but we also have to think about the proof of relationship requirement as well. So there are now two major requirements to satisfy for phase one milestone.
But still, the pay stubs are acceptable without a cause.
I'm
yes.
sorry, what did you say again?
In phase one, the pay stubs themselves are acceptable for payment. We do not need a cause unless
That's
we don't
correct.
Have the pay stubs. Gotcha. Okay, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Okay, Anna, we'll take one more call on the phone and then we'll move to the chat.
Perfect. We take our next question from Jamie Smith, AES. Please go ahead.
Hi. I just had a question regarding the employer prepared earnings statements. We actually do not get those from the employers. We have our clients get them, and we receive them from our clients. Would that count in that case as a pay stub? Because we are receiving it from our client, and we do have a relationship with our clients. Most employers want an authorization to provide that information to third-party entities such as employment networks.
But when you say your client, this is Deborah, when you say your clients, are you talking about the beneficiary, the ticket holder?
Yes, the ticket holder. We require our ticket holder to contact their HR or payroll departments and have them fill that form out, and they submit that to us. Our beneficiaries do.
Oh, why couldn't the beneficiary just get a pay stub?
The employer prepared earnings statement is because their employer their pay stubs don't show the tax withholding. So that's why we're having them do the employer prepared earnings statement.
Okay. Okay, but
it's like a mom and pop, like one lady of one client of many of ours was working at a mom and pop chiropractor shop, and she literally got just a check. She had nothing attached to the check as proof. She got just the check from the employer, and so we had the owner fill out the employer prepared earnings statement, and that's all she provided.
Let me just let you tell you the reason for the employer prepared earnings statement as it applies to ticket and to earnings. The reason we initially required that is because there was a pay stub. However, the pay stub did not give us the indication of the withholdings that were made. And the employer prepared earnings statement was really supposed to supplement that pay stub. So, and what you're talking about is, yes, give us the pay stub along with the employer prepared earnings statement so that we could see that it is a regular employee and not a contractor or a self-employed individual. But we need them both. We just can't.
But what do I do in the terms of the lady? Like, it's literally like a check that I would write out for me to cash at a bank, like what my personal check looked like. She doesn't have anything attached to the check.
It's
a mom and a pop. Like.
Yeah, I think in that circumstance you would have to do a COS.
And would I, on the COS, would I just include, you know, employer EOE provided by beneficiary?
Well, no, what the COS would have would be the services that you provided to the beneficiary. The cost has nothing to do with that. That's
But my relationship is her providing that EOE, that employer prepared earnings statement to me. I don't have to make that quarter, that monthly check-in. She's providing it to me. The beneficiary herself is giving it to me.
Well, we would need the beneficiary to sign that, I think, in that circumstance. Like, because we don't know. I mean, not that we're saying anything to the contrary, but we don't know who it's coming from, just to be honest. Okay. So, because most employers have official pay stubs. And if one employer is just writing her a check, we don't even know that the person is going to have the lawful taxes. It's sort of like self-employed persons. That's why we don't pay those people until after we get the data back from IRS.
Oh, they're taking out her taxes. It shows it on the EOE. They're taking it out, and they're paying them in on her employer prepared earnings statement. It's just that it's like literally just a self-employed, like the, you know, it would be if I owned my business, but I employed you as my receptionist. And I paid you, but I paid my paid taxes on you quarterly and took all of your earnings out quarterly.
Okay, hi, this is Kimberly. So what you can do is you can reach out to me after the call and we can go to it because this looks like it's a case-by-case basis, but just to be safe, and I listen that the beneficiary is providing the employer-prepared earnings statement. What I would ask, and Carol mentioned this earlier, is that you still would need to submit a cost, because what the cost will identify is the services that you provided to the beneficiary. So we understand the beneficiary is providing you with the employer-prepared earnings statement, but the certification of services would show us what you're providing or you provided to the beneficiary. So that's why we're saying submit both the employee prepared earnings statement, but the COS would allow us to see the services you provided, which will show proof of relationship. But I'll make sure John puts my email address in the chat, and if you want to reach out to me on an individual basis, we can definitely look at the case.
Thank you.
Okay, and now, Anna, what we would do, we'll take a couple of questions from the chat, please.
All right. Hello, this is John Melnick. And our first question comes from Heather Miller, who asks, for a phase one milestone four, if we have pay stubs for 8 months and are missing 1 month and do the COS for that 1 month, would that be okay?
Yes.
All right. And that was an easy one. And our next one comes from Amy Wallace, who asks, for the phase one milestone period, monthly requirement was only asked after August 2018. Are you requiring us to show monthly contact, even though that wasn't a requirement prior to August 2018?
I guess, Amy, you're talking about attainment months prior to August 18th, right? I'm sorry. That's in the chat. The answer is yes. We do need to have those services identified prior for attainment months prior to August 2018. August 2018, it was when the policy was put into effect. It doesn't apply to the attainment month.
Okay. And just to clarify, the policy's been in effect since September of 2017. I just think people weren't clear and didn't see it in their TPA. But it is in the TPA.
You're right. And
someone wants to know what – excuse me, John, just for a second. Someone asked the question, what is the attainment month? That's the claim month for the payment. So if we're talking about a phase one milestone four, and the beneficiary has earnings of at a trial work level for 9 months in December 2017, the attainment month would have been December 2017. That's when they attain their ninth, 9 months of trial work level.
Thanks, Deborah. And John, our next question.
Yes, so this would be our third question from the chat, and it comes from Kim Barrett, who asks, is it required to send pay stubs to the local SSA office if we're reporting it in the portal?
Yeah, I mean, it's not ever required of the EN to send it to the field office. It's nice. It is required for a ticket holder, however, for them to always report to the field office.
Okay. And now, Anna, we'll go back to the phone lines, please.
Thank you. We take our next question from Beatrice Street from Empower. Please go ahead. We will take our next question from Beatrice Street from Empower. Please go ahead.
I'm sorry, my phone was still on mute. Hello to everyone. My question was already answered from some of the other ENs. Thank you so much.
Okay, you're welcome.
You're welcome.
We will take our next question from Kathy Spencer, Carrier Source Flood Lore Volusia. Please go ahead.
Hi, are you there?
We will take our next question from Kathy Spencer. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Kathy. I actually got part of the answer from John. I was asking about a suitability question, and I wasn't sure if this is the right place to ask. But some of the staff was under the impression that anybody who worked with a ticket-to-work customer had to go through the suitability process. And so my question is it only those individuals who actually have access to the portal? Because we have, you know, staff who do facilitating for workshops, or if they need assistance on the career zone with navigating the computer system. Do those individuals have to go through the process as well?
Hi, this is Kara. Actually, this is not the right call for that question, but I'll just answer it real quick for you. Everybody who is working with our ticket holders must undergo suitability. It is not just those in the portal.
Okay, thank you very much.
We will take our next question from Kathy Magu, AHEDD, please go ahead.
Thank you. It's Kathy McDuff from AHEAD, and also my question was answered earlier. Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy.
Mm-hmm. It appears there are no further questions over the phone.
Okay. And, John, do we have any questions in the chat?
Yeah, we've got quite a few queued up. So our next one comes from Robin, who asks, do we have to list the SSA reference number on the COS?
Do you mean the work case number? Oh, we can't. She's not there today.
I don't know what the reference number is.
I think
Social Security number?
No, I think, John, that maybe they're referring to the work case number, and it would be helpful, yes.
All right. And then our next question comes from Christina, who asks, if you submit pay stubs by fax and within the ticket portal, are any additional documents required for payment?
Say that one more time, John. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. If you submit pay stubs by fax and through the ticket portal, are any additional documents required for payment?
This is Deborah. There's a possibility. It all depends whether you have clear pay stubs. Those are normally what you would need to submit for us to determine whether or not the earnings were sufficient. But, you know, in some cases, there are other documents that we have, a supplemental earnings statement, some things like that. But basically, for payment requests, if you submit pay stubs and payment requests, that's sufficient for us to determine whether or not you've met the requirement for earnings. And if it's a pay stub, it would be proof of relationship for that particular claim month. So the long and short of it, the answer is yes. Basically, that's all you need.
And this is Kimberly, John. You can also let them know if they submit that information and if there's additional information needed, then we will perform an outreach and request that information.
And I would just like to add to that, my advice to all ENs is don't even request the payment unless you have all the necessary information to receive the payment. It just makes it a lot easier on you and a lot less complicated for those processing it.
Right. And we have another question from Norma Belton, who asks, is there a way that SSA can notify us when there is a delay payment, such as with the ePay system that dropped in July due to the services and supports review findings?
There's not a delay in payments. Anybody can request a payment through the portal at any time. ePay is not a given. It's not in the regulations. It's not in your TPA. You know, we do it as an efficiency, as a courtesy. We are currently working on determining who will and will not be eligible for our next ePay file. That should be done shortly. And at that time, ePay will start back up. But until that happens, anybody can request a payment through the portal. That shouldn't stop anybody from receiving. Nobody is stopped from receiving payments. Payments have not stopped.
We have additional questions over the phone.
Okay, and I'm sorry, you said you did have some questions over the phone?
We have participants queuing for questions.
Okay, we'll go ahead and take those questions now.
Thank you. We will take our next question from Ann Austin from Laridon. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving. I have a question about if on your IWP you've listed, you know, you're going to do some career counseling and write a resume, cover letter, you know, all the required services, and it ends up that the client doesn't actually need the resume, or, you know, if they agree that they don't need that service even though we say we're going to provide it, or if there's just one thing that we don't provide, what happens with the COS at that point?
Well, if your IWP changes, you really should be updating your IWP first. Your costs should reflect the services that you did provide and the dates you provided them. But the IWP is basically the contract between you and the ticket holder. So if they're saying they don't want certain services, then the IWP should be updated.
Okay. Thank you.
We will take our next question from John Bertram from Land the Job. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. I'm still challenged by helping people with who are self-employed, and, you know, we have quite a few of them, and trying to figure out the COS or the process so that if they do have sufficient earnings that are reported, I want to make sure we'll be able to help them through a CDS model, and I'm just trying to figure out how we're supposed to approach those individuals, especially when many of them are upset because they're not getting the possibility of participating until many months later. So if anyone could provide some guidance on that, I would really appreciate it.
Okay. Is this John?
Yes, it is.
I think I remember seeing your question a couple times, and I think I understand what you're asking. So let me just restate it to make sure I have it straight. The situation you have as a CDS, DN, you have clients, beneficiaries, who are self-employed. So with this proof of relationship requirement, you're trying to figure out how that works. Is that it? With a self-employed?
Yes, it would be very helpful because contact with them can be difficult because of the challenges of getting paid. You know, they have an expectation that some information would happen a lot sooner. And, you know, calling them every month for 8 to 10 months during that waiting process can be very challenging for the representatives that have to do
okay.
that.
I understand that this is a little bit different because for self-employed self-employed income and beneficiaries, there is no pay stub. So for you to know what their earnings are or for us to know what their earnings are, we have to wait until the IRS reports those earnings information. It's always been that way, by the way. It's always
yep.
been that by the so you've had to wait to the IRS reported SSA post that information so we know what the monthly earnings are. So I understand that part of it. The part that may be a little difficult for you is not knowing what those monthly earnings are. So this is my suggestion. You don't have to do it this way. If you are in contact with your clients, and let's say the tax year has ended and they have filed their income tax, and by that time we believe we should have some earnings in Social Security system. If they have reported to you what their earnings are, then you can go through the portal and submit a payment request for your milestone for that particular claim month, because without the pay stub, you don't know what their earnings are for any given claim month. If they have reported to you their earnings are of a certain level, then they will be in SSA's database. And that will come up as earnings already proven. Now, it might be a month or so off. If the earnings don't come up already proven, you can try another month. When you get a hit on that, and you should have been able to also have had to give us a cost for that particular time, because if the beneficiary, let's talk about the prior year, whether you've been working with them while they're...
Well, no, Deb, he's not working with them because they're CDS. That's not their job. That's not in their agreement for CDS.
Oh, that's right. You did
their their agreement is to reimburse the beneficiary for services that the beneficiary purchased themselves.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot you did say CDS.
So it's a whole different animal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and it just makes it a little bit more difficult because, you know, they find the process to be fairly challenging to begin with. And, you know, we attempt to explain it to them. You know, we explain that your job is to report to the IRS at least annually, if not quarterly, if you can. And the quicker you report your earnings to Social Security, that helps. But what brought up this issue was the COS and the relationship building. And, you know, we're actively trying to instill a two-way relationship. So if we haven't heard from you, you should contact us so we can keep that relationship built so that they won't run into problems with claims. So, you know, we're busy trying to do that. But at the same time, the one place where we have issue is the self-employed individual, because, you know, it quite literally could be a year before they have any opportunity.
John, this is Kara. So let me just go take one step back. So for you guys, for the phase ones, in order for you to prove relationship on your COS, because things kind of happen in reverse for you guys, is that you would need to show receipts that the beneficiary gives you for purchases, for services purchased.
Okay.
In order to prove to us that, you know, payment is warranted. As far as self-employed persons go, we've been dealing with this since dinosaurs were walking. I mean, Susan and I used to be like on teleconferences for this. We had a little cadre going probably 10 years ago about this. And it really just comes down to sort of what Deborah was saying. Bottom line is we can't pay anybody until we get the IRS data back, and it will take sometimes a year. You know,
right.
It's not the best way to build your business is on persons who are self-employed, but, you know, if you're helping them, that's great, but you still need to really keep those receipts and show us the purchases that they've made.
Yes, we encourage them to send in their receipts. You know, sometimes we hadn't been doing it on a month-to-month basis, but perhaps we can start doing it that way to encourage the relationship building, that they send information in on a monthly basis, because we can hold it until there's proof of earnings, and I suppose that's one way of developing a relationship over the period
Absolutely.
Of time we're waiting.
Yep, I think that's a good idea. Okay, thanks, John. So, Anna, do we have any other calls?
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Anna, do we have any other questions in the queue?
We take our next question from Judy Sanderson, JSIL. Please go ahead.
Hi. Hopefully this will be a quick question. When we have a report from the work number that has appropriate amount of pay on it and we put a cause with it, will it be accepted even if the pay information is not yet in the portal already?
Yes, it will be.
Okay, all righty. And then I just wanted to make a comment regarding when you were talking with Susan and the statement that if somebody is deciding they don't want to have contact, that we need to have them sign a form that says that they don't want to have contact. And I understand you're looking for documentation that that's what the case is. But the problem we're going to run into is by the time we know they don't want to have contact anymore, we're not having contact, and getting a signed statement is going to be difficult. So we're getting put between a rock and a hard place. Yeah, there was somebody said that if somebody
– Okay, I apologize. I take it back.
Yeah, it just puts us between a rock and a hard place. Yeah.
No,
it puts us between a rock and a hard place. And which means, like as Susan says, we've done a lot of work up front for nothing. We get nothing up front. And then when it comes time that we're hopefully going to make up for that big hole we've dug ourselves in financially, all these roadblocks are being put in the way of our getting payments. And that's going to be another one I could see being a problem. So
we sent out cannot give you the date off the top of my head. But when we had the conference call about doing monthly and quarterly contact, we told you guys if you cannot get in contact with the beneficiaries by phone and you're documenting that, to then send a letter to the beneficiary with a receipt. So keep the letter in their file that you know that it was sent to them, and, you know, just build a case for yourself that you have tried to reach out to this person with no attempt. I mean, not no attempt, with no success.
So you're saying that that will be acceptable if we can document we're sending the letters. And my understanding also
but
is that
you
we
also
don't have
to. Judy, let me qualify that. You also have to show in your cost that you did provide services to the beneficiary.
If we didn't do anything, we shouldn't get paid. No, I understand that.
And just so you guys know, we do QA these, and it goes up to SSA QA as well, and we do call beneficiaries ourselves. So we want to make sure that the beneficiaries are being served. That's our top priority.
Sure. No, I don't have any problem with that. It's just when we run into the situation when somebody has decided that, you know, they've got the job they want their life to be just like anybody else's. They don't want to have to be connected to special services of any kind, and I understand that. But it can be difficult for us then to document enough so that we can get reimbursed for what we've already done. So I wanted to make that statement, and that was it. Yeah, that was it for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will take our next question from Birta Street from Empower. Please go ahead.
Hello again. Again, my question was answered already. Thank you.
Okay. Maybe the third time will be the charm.
Maybe so.
Okay. So let's
final question from Hog Fu from Work Incorporated. Please go ahead.
Hi. So we submitted for payment for the month of September pay stubs for a client. And so the pay stubs are every other week. So when you add the two we submitted three pay stubs covering the whole month of September. So parts of it overlaps into August and parts of it overlap into October. So when you take the two pay stubs in the month of September, they don't add up to the 850, okay? But because they're paid every other week instead of semi-monthly, if you factor it out, because if it's every other week, it's only, let's see, 20 days. But in a full month, it's 22 days. So if you factor it out for the whole month, in other words, it's 4.3 weeks instead of 4 weeks, then the gross earnings would exceed 850. Would that, we haven't been paid for it yet still, and I'm wondering if that is the issue.
This is Deborah Tennessee, and I know John has put Kim Cutler's email address in the chat. We have to take a look at that because I understand what you're saying, but we have a system that does calculate earnings, and we do calculate earnings based on the date they were paid as well as the month they were earned in. And whichever month is the earliest where they meet the requirements for payment is what we pay. So we will have to look at those pay stubs and analyze, you know, just where they fall and let you know what the earnings are. And then let me just say another thing. We have something called an earnings calculator that's out on the website, and you can plug those pay stubs and those dates and those earnings in there to, you know, just kind of give you a heads up whether or not the earnings do meet the requirements. But if you do contact Kim Cutler, and the reason why I'm asking you to do that is because of PII and everything else, that we can take a look at those specific pay stubs and get back with you.
Okay. Thank you. I'll go ahead and do that. But just a question, though, do you have a system? So you do have a system in place so that if they're paid by every other week, that you account the full 30 days and not just the 28 days in those two pages?
Yeah. Our system does prorate. It looks at the period of time. It does all that. We don't manually calculate. We have a great system, so we don't make any mistakes with that.
Got it. So question, if our payment gets rejected, we should get notified, right?
It's in ITOPS in the portal. You'll get notified. But we want to keep the questions with the cost issue for this call. So I would reach out to Kimberly with the specific questions on a particular payment, and she will help you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. And thanks, Anna. Now we will take questions from the chat.
All right. Our first question comes from Raimundo, who asks, if phase one milestone one, the phase one milestone two gets denied due to COS guidelines not being met, what happens to those payments? Are they automatically lost and are we never able to get them? And when can we build the next phase?
Okay, hi, this is Kimberly. So the way it's set up, payments must be made in order. So if in that scenario, if you submit for phase one milestone one and two and you are unable to provide proof of relationship, then there is a possibility of having the ticket unassigned because you must be able to show that. So in that case, if you are unable to show proof of relationship, then yes, that ticket may be unassigned.
All right. And our next question comes from Linda Pacino, who asks, so you're saying that we can use the work number for phase two and outcome payments without the COS?
Correct.
All right. And then our next question comes from Teresa Ellinger, who asks, what if the client sends us the work number report? Since it is contact with the client, would COS still be needed?
No, you still need a COS.
All right. And our next question comes from Mary Lynn, who asks, when we get an email notice from payments stating missing documentation, there seems to be a varying number of days in which we can go in the portal and pull a new barcode cover sheet and update the COS. Sometimes it's stating less than nine calendar days, and other times it's stating more than nine calendar days. Can you please clarify?
Yes, hi, Mary Lynn. So you're right. So basically when we're outreaching for missing information, you have 9 business days to submit the information. When we're outreaching for information related to your cost, so if your cost is insufficient or you did not submit the cost, when we outreach, you have 30 days to submit the information.
All right. And our next question after that comes from Matthew Silverstein, who asks, is there a way that you can send a mock COS so that we can see an example of a COS that would be approved by Social Security?
I think if you go on our Ticket to Work website under the archives, the last all-in payments call that we had on October 30th, we actually provided an example of a cost that would pass review and a cost that would fail review. So it is on our website under archives. So, John, if you just put that information in the chat.
Yep, and that link's already in the chat there. And our next question comes from Kathy Spencer, who asks, so if we have facilitators doing workshops or providing assessments, would we not have to go through the process?
I'm sorry, John.
Say that again, John. I'm sorry.
Kathy Spencer asks, so if we have facilitators doing workshops or providing assessments, would we not have to go through the process? I believe she's referring to the COS.
I think she's referring to suitability, and they would have to go through suitability.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then our next question comes from Virginia, who asks, does this apply to workforce board ENs?
No, it does not, unless they are taken off of ePay for failing that certification of services review, service and support review, I apologize.
Okay. And then our next question comes from Sabrina, who asks, tickets are assignable. However, beneficiary has utilized tickets in the past, and we jump right to outcome. Is there any way EN can determine this during the onset?
Our systems person is not in the room, but I do – does it – hold on one second. And you may be not all the same. John, ask the question again, because we're a little confused what they're asking.
Okay. I'll try and see if I can rephrase this. So they have a beneficiary that has a ticket that's assignable. However, the beneficiary has utilized the ticket in the past. So when they assigned it, it jumped right to outcome payments. Is there a way an EN can determine this before a ticket assignment?
No, I don't think there's a way. And it's unusual to assign a ticket and it go right to outcomes, because when you assign the ticket, it can't already be in outcomes because that means the person's in suspense. Mm-hmm. So that's an unusual situation, I think.
Yeah.
All right. And our next question comes from Christina, who asks, if you do not have pay stubs, then submitting the COS form should be the next step to request payment with verification of relationship. Is this correct?
Yes, that's correct.
You have to just make sure, John, just make sure you note that the certification of services is not a standalone. They have to show proof of earnings first. So they can't send in the COS in lieu of proof of earnings.
Right. That goes back to making sure everything is there before you request a payment.
All right. And then Sarai asks, do VRs have a time frame to report their closure status with SSA? We have seen clients unassigned from a VR over 3 years ago that still show an undetermined status.
That happens. There's, you know, we do try to encourage the VRs to unassign the ticket when they are done providing services. 3 years sounds a little excessive. Our advice is to have the ticket holder get in touch with the VR and ask them to unassign the ticket.
All right.
And also, John, let me just elaborate on that one. And the ticket holder can request to have the ticket unassigned as well.
Okay, John, we'll take one more for the chat, and then we'll take maybe one more from the phone lines.
Okay. And our next question comes from Vincent, who asks, can we still get payment pronounced in the portal?
Payment what?
Printout?
Oh, printouts.
I think you can go in and download payments made to me. Uh-huh. I think you can generate that through type of report.
I think what happens is you can export it to Excel and then manipulate any way you need in Excel and print out. SSA does not, nor does Maximus, actually have access to the portal.
Right.
So just so the, I don't think the ENs realize that we don't go into the portal.
Okay. Thank you, John. And Anna, do we have any calls holding or any questions holding in the queue?
Yes. We take our next question from Lauren Womack, Lafayette Consolidated Government. Please go ahead.
Hi, I was wondering, is there a review every year for a certification of services, or is it just random?
No, it's not random. That's different than this certification of service. That's what we call a service and supports review. So that's a review of more so your total business as opposed to, you know, or a percentage of, as opposed to a particular payment you're requesting. But that should happen on a yearly basis.
Okay.
At a minimum.
And that's how, and that was what was being used to determine whether people would be able to stay with EasyPay or not?
EPay. Oh, it's electronic, not EasyPay.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. And Anna, we'll go ahead and take one more call from the queue.
Thank you. We take our next question from Sarai Donoso, Disabled Workers LTC. Please go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. I had the question about the VR that is showing a client with an undetermined status. I mean, the client has been already unassigned from the VR. It's just the status that is still showing as undetermined. I mean, is there a fair process for us to be able to obtain payment for those type of scenarios when the VR has failed to communicate with you?
I'm confused. You're saying the ticket is unassigned from – that's actually – I'd like to take that offline because that's not what this call is for. So I think that you need to contact Kimberly, and she'll get in touch with the right people to figure out this particular case.
Okay.
Anna, we'll take another. Okay, go ahead. If it's related to this call, go ahead.
Yep, I have another question. You said that, well, somebody said that we need to provide provide relationship for the claim month. So the problem that we have sometimes is that we try to contact the client and they fail to provide us with a phone number or return our calls during the month that we're using as claim months. And sometimes, it's very common for us to get pay stubs in a chunk, like 6 months at a time or a year's worth of pay stub at a time. I mean, is there some kind of another way to go about that? Like maybe we can show that we have provided services for maybe 3 or 6 months prior and after the claim months if we were not able to get in touch with the client during that same claim month. I don't know if that makes sense.
This is Deborah. If you're getting pay stubs in chunks, that's proof of relationship. The fact that you get several months at one time, as long as they cover the claim month that you're submitting a request for, it's okay. So the fact that they may not want to talk to you or whatever, but if they're giving you pay stubs, that is a relationship. They may not give them to you every month, but as long as they give them for the period that the claim covers, you have a proof of relationship.
The problem is when we receive pay stubs after the period the claim covers. Let's say we're claiming June 2018, and we received all of the pay stubs for this year on October 2018, and the client, we were not able to get in touch with the client on June, which is the month that we're trying to claim. So what do we do in that situation? I mean, we did receive pay stubs for it, but 4 months later.
So that's fine. You would just submit for payment when you get the actual pay stubs. So if you do not get the pay stubs for June until October, then in October is when you would submit payment for June. Was that your question?
Okay. And if I have to show a COS for that type of request, would that be considered?
No, your pay stubs shows proof of earnings and proof of relationship. So you would not need a cost.
Okay, but in the case that, let's say we're missing a pay stub, it was mentioned before that we can submit a COS to, like, in lieu of that missing pay stub?
Yes, you can do that.
Then you'd have to submit the COS combined with the month that you have with the pay stubs. So if some months cover pay stubs, that's fine, and then the other months where you do not have pay stubs, but you have some other proof of earnings, then you would need to send in a cost.
So can we show, can the COS show that we received the pay stubs maybe in October? I mean, would that be sufficient to get a pay stub for a claim month of June?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Whatever month your pay stub covers, you're fine. If it's a month that you do not have a pay stub, then you need a cost.
Right. The problem is that we sometimes don't get in touch with the client for that on that same month that we're claiming, and we're able to get in touch with the client months after.
And that's fine.
And
And I understand you can submit for a claim up to 2 years, so you still have a window of time. So in October, you can submit for June as long as you have to pay stubs.
Right. That's correct. It seems like you guys are requiring us to show proof of contact for the same month that we're claiming for a payment. And sometimes that's really hard to do because we get pay stubs after the claim month.
I think I see what you're talking about. The month of June, you do not have anything. You do not have anything.
Right.
October. Okay, so for the month of June, you're not going to submit a payment request. You don't have a cost to show any type of relationship, and you don't have a pay stub. So at the point where you do get that pay stub, it could be September, October, it could be next January. Whenever you get it, you're still going to make your claim for the month of June. It may be later it's always after the month anyway that closes, but you don't have to. I think you're getting confused, or maybe I'm getting confused, but I'm thinking that you're thinking that you have to have a pay stub at the time or at that month that
I think she's saying, are we, like, can
well,
I
Well, what my question is really...
I understand what you're saying. She's saying, I can't prove a relationship in June, but listen, they're still sending me pay stubs for other months, so can I say that I've got a relationship with them because they're obviously sending me pay stubs? I think that's what she's saying.
As long as that pay stub covers June, yes.
Yes. So the bottom
okay,
line
in the case that we...
You need to show proof of relationship for the month that you're requesting.
And if that's in October for June, then that's fine.
Okay, and in the case that we don't receive our pay stubs and we try contacting and contacting them and
then
I want to request.
Then if we have the earnings in ours, if you go into the portal and see that we have the earnings validated in our system, then you can send in a cost along with that month.
Mm-hmm.
And that would qualify you, that may qualify you for a payment.
But Kimberly said earlier that leaving a message would not constitute quality services.
So if you can't get a hold of the beneficiary, then it's just like we stated previously, you would send a certified letter or a letter in which you can prove that you've attempted to get a hold of the beneficiary with no success. So something from the post office that says it was returned or something like that would justify your attempt.
I want to qualify that even more. Thanks, Wanda. It depends we're talking about phase one, milestone one, and you can't get in touch with the beneficiary, that's not acceptable for SSA. Like when I was talking earlier, I was talking about down the road.
Okay.
Like maybe possibly milestone three, maybe milestone four. But when you're in the beginning, you've been only working with them for like a couple months or whatever, and that's not acceptable that you're not in touch with them in the beginning. And if you cannot get in touch with them, then those tickets should be unassigned.
Well, we have situations where we receive a few pay stubs from the client that are not enough to make TAR work level, but we know they make TAR work level because it's showing in the SSA system, but they fail to submit the remaining pay stubs.
Okay. What we would like for you to do is if you could just reach out to our in payments help desk, and then they would be able to answer your questions. Because this may be on a case-by-case basis, so we don't want to just keep generalizing it, but if you have certain cases with the evidence of earnings or proof of relationship, then we would look at that on a case-by-case basis.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you very much.
And I would ask that John put the link to contact the help desk in the chat.
Okay. Thank you.
I would encourage Ian to call the help desk. For these general types of questions, if you have these questions that we've not answered on this call. This is Kimberly. So I want to thank everyone for their participation in the call today. I know we may still have a lot of questions in the chat, so we will get John to send us the list of questions, and we will get those questions answered, and we will have that posted up in a couple of weeks. So, again, I just want to thank everyone for taking the time today to participate in the call, and I wish that everyone have a happy and safe Thanksgiving.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.